Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. There must not have been anything good on television tonight. What a privilege to be with you and to join with you. I have said for many years that I've seen some beautiful sights. I saw the aspens in Colorado one time just at sunset when the light was penetrating, hitting on the sides of the aspen trees, and looked like God had stretched a beautiful canopy across the sky and slung a wisp of clouds across there and just gave us all kinds of colors of gold and green and brown and bronze. And I saw the sea in Oregon one time when it was angry, and I was impressed with the power of God as the seashore was pounded repeatedly by the various and sundry waves that came in. And I must tell you that there's one scene I've seen hundreds of times in my life now that I never tire of. It's the most beautiful scene I've ever seen. And that's when the people of God come together. There is nothing that rivals seeing the people of God come together. And there's so many people in this audience tonight that are special to me, who have had influence on my life, with whom I have shared great joy and sorrow at times, and for whom I have the highest respect and regard. I said to someone, I always run across somebody that I knew somewhere else that knows somebody that I know somewhere else every time I go to services. And I said to the person, I said, it's a small world, isn't it? He said, no, it's a large family. And we are a family. And I'm grateful for that. Thank you for coming. I'd like to call your name and tell everybody that I love you. But I won't do that tonight because it might embarrass you and tax my memory. But I thank you for coming. I know you're here, and I appreciate it so very much. Wonderful singing every night, every service. And I've appreciated that. I'd like you to read with me from the Gospel of Luke. I'm going to be reading from chapter 15 with your kind permission. Chapter 15 of the book of Luke. Then draw near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. And he spake this parable unto them, saying, what man of you having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness, and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. Either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doth not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it? And when she hath found it, she calleth her friends and her neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. Likewise, I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. And he said, a certain man had 2 sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder brother was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants to ask what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, and would not go in. Therefore came his father out, and entreated him. He answering said unto his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. He said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad. For this my brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. A triptych, spelling T-R-I-P-T-Y-C-K, a triptych, is a hinged writing instrument consisting of three leaves that was used in Roman history. It also is a word that describes a three-paneled art piece. Norma and I were in Chicago one time. We saw a beautiful triptych of art. On this side was the priest that walked by on the other side. And on this side was the priest, the Levite that walked by on the other side. And in the middle panel, there was the prodigal son. No. Who would have been there, do you think? I expect it would have been the good fellow. The Good Samaritan. Now, what we're saying here is that there is a triptych here that we want to look at. This triptych consists of three parables. So if you want to be technical, it could be called a parabolical triptych. But you don't have to write that down. This triptych consists of three different ways that Jesus is saying the same thing. Parables in the general rule teach just one central thematic. They may have all kinds of things that appertain to that thematic. They may have all kinds of things that go in different directions about that theme that are true things. But there is a central thematic in this parabolical triptych. And that central theme is, I came to seek and save the lost. Let me say it again. Jesus is saying in all three of these parables, I came to seek and save that which is lost. As I said, there are other truths there, as we'll see in a few moments. But he's saying to those who were critical of his efforts to be with the ordinary people, with the Samaritans, with the Pharisees, with the various and sundry, with the Samaritans, various sundry people that they usually didn't associate with. Here's his answer. I came to seek and save the lost. And he chose to say it in three different ways. The parables show, in the first one, the loss of the sheep, which is the loss of safety. The sheep, when it went out by itself, was so dumb it couldn't find its way back. And so it loses its safety. It has no kind of connection to the flock anymore. In the lost coin, we see perhaps the loss of usefulness. It could have been used to buy goods and services, or it could have been some sort of indication of her marital status. In either case, it was something that was lost that was useful to her. In the lost son, we see the loss of fellowship. That which he had with his father is diminished and carried away to the far country. In all of these parables, the shepherd seeks the sheep. The shepherd seeks the sheep. In all of these parables, someone seeks something or someone. The woman seeks after the coin. She would have had to have swept and looked all over for the coin. She sought after it. The father sought for the return of his son. And in all of these parables, the sheep is returned to safety, the coin is returned to usefulness, and the son returns to fellowship. Don't you love happy endings? I remember when I was a kid growing up, we used to go to the movie on Saturday afternoon. It was the same movie every week. They just changed it from the cowboys and crooks to the cowboys and the Indians, and they just did the same movie with a little different plot every time. I remember seeing movies when they'd start out with a clippity-clop sounding beautiful banjo sound, and you'd see this wagon train traversing the plains of maybe Kansas, and they'd be going along, and somebody on the back would be plucking the banjo, and I came from Alabama, they'd be plucking and making their way along there, and all of a sudden, 6,246,312 Indians come like a big tsunami over the top of the hill or toward the wagon train. And the wagon master says, "Circle the wagons." And they circle the wagons and they get them all circling around. And they're fighting the Indians and they're whelping like dogs and going around from place to place. And all of a sudden, da-da-da-da-da-da, here comes the cavalry. And everything's rescued. All three of these parables give me that same kind of feeling. They tell you in every sense that there's a happy ending to all of them. And Jesus is really saying, "I came to seek and save what is lost." Now, I want to spend some time with you this evening in the third of these parables. It has some incidental truths that I want to look at. What we see here is what the Son asked for. And that tells us what sin is. It tells us where the Son went. And that tells us what sin does. And it tells us about the return of the Son to His Father. And that tells us the remedy for sin. So let's try along that trek and see if we can find some interesting things to talk about this fellow who was called beautifully the prodigal son. It's not prodigal, it's prodigal. When I first started preaching at Southside, the preacher that was there before me didn't preach many meetings. And every time I'd go in a meeting, they'd say, "Well, looky here, the prodigal has returned." Prodigality is wastefulness. What they were really saying is the wasteful one has returned. Well, I didn't think it was wasteful anyway, so I set them straight after a little while what the word prodigal means. It means wasteful. So then, we have this prodigal son. He's an interesting fellow. I have a picture of him in my mind, and I hope you'll let me paint the picture. I think he was a handsome young fellow. I think he was kind of disrupted by the things that he saw around the house. He was constantly under the supervision of his father and his mother, and probably his brother, too, for that matter. And he was having to go through all these chores and do all of these things for his father and mother and his brother. And as he did all these things, he was just upset because he was being restrained all the time. Furthermore, he would go out on the evenings and sit on the top of the roof, as they did in the Oriental economy, and he would look out far across the plains and over to the hills of the far country. And over there, he would see the blinking lights of the far country. And he thought to himself, "Wow, I wonder what it's like over there." He was a long way from there, but he could see the lights on a clear night, especially on the roof of the house when it was clear and beautiful. And he would look and say, "Those are the lights of the far country." He had heard about the far country. Because the old peddler man who peddled things for cookware and things like that would come through about once a year. And after he had talked to the parents, he would whisper to him, invite him over down by the creek. And when he was down by the creek, he would talk to him about the parties they have in the far country. And all of the things that went on in the far country. He thought to himself, "My, I could be a part of that. I would love to do that. I would love to go to the far country and have all of those wonderful times that they have together over there." He was bedazzled by the lights of the far country. The devil was putting a little trinket out there. You ever catch a fish? You know how you catch a fish? Well, you go out here and you get a piece of string and you put a hook on the end of it and you go out here in the lake or the river and you drop it in. The fish comes by and he says, "Look at there." He's trying to catch a fish, and he gets on the fish, and you bring, you know better than that, don't you? But I'll tell you how you can catch a fish. What you do is take a piece of plastic about 4 inches long and paint it red and green and yellow. And you put a feather on one end of it. And you put 3 strands of plastic out the back of it. One's a little longer than the other one, and then the third one a little longer than that. And then you put a propeller on the end of it, and then you put a hook underneath all that. You go along there, and all of a sudden that old fish will look on there, and he'll say, "My, look at that thing there." And you pull it a little bit, and it begins to jiggle, and the first thing you know, he says, I got to get a little closer look at that thing. And he comes a little bit closer to it and a little bit closer. And about that time, you jiggle it a little more, and the little things begin to flutter, and the little propeller begins to go around. And about that time, I don't know if a fish's mouth waters or not, but he's coming along there. He's coming along there, and he sees that fish, that hook. He can't see the hook. He's seeing that beautiful thing, and he says, "If I can get close enough to that, I'm going to get me a bite of that." And about that time you pull it, the sun begins to refract the rays, and the propeller's going around, and it bedazzled him. The first thing you know, you got him hook, line, and sinker. That's not nearly how the devil operates. It's exactly how he operates. Let no man say when he is tempted, "I am tempted of God," for God cannot be tempted with evil. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And lust, when it hath conceived, bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. This young fellow was bedazzled by the lights of the far country. I don't know if it was the old peddler man, or it may have been the head of the camel group that came by. They would come by various times, going another place, a caravan, and he would have intercourse with the various fellows that came along there, and they'd talk to him about the lights of the far country and what it was like over there and all the partying, and he was being seduced by the devil. You may rest assured that he was going that direction for a long, long time. How it was, I've merely imagined for you, but that's not nearly how the devil works. It is completely how he works. And you need to understand that, and I need to understand that. No matter what your age is or what your occupation is, we need to understand that the devil is constantly bedazzling us with the lights of the far country. He's dangling before us the baubles and bangles and beads of this life, and he wants us over there. And you may count on that from now on. And please be advised, he knows no respite. He knows no taking time off. He's on his mule all the time trying to drag you away, trying to get you to do what he wants you to do. Every time that's the case. My brothers and I, when I was younger, went to New York. We got into the airport at Newark and took a taxi cab into New York City, and we stayed at the Hotel Prince George. And we got there about 9 o'clock at night. We barely could get our suitcases emptied until we ran to Fifth Avenue. We had to see it. Here were 3 kids from Morton looking at the Big Apple. And what amazed me the most about it was that there were lights everywhere. There were lights that traveled up and down buildings. There were lights that cascaded like waterfalls. There were lights that twinkled like stars. There were lights that ran in block, that rode in block. There were lights that wrote in cursive. There were lights that did everything. And everything was pulsating. And I thought to myself, here we are, 3 kids from Morton in the Big Apple. Look at this. I'm going to tell you how it was when we left. We saw it the next morning in God's light. It was putrid and pitiful. We saw what was still left there. And the lights of God gave us a real look at it. The lights of the far country are lying to you if you're not careful. So he gets all juiced up about this, because I want to say something to you. All sin, hear me carefully, all sin is a selfish choice of one's own person in preference to God. He's about to do exactly that. And he's been drawn away, enticed by his own lust. He's been mesmerized by the far country and what he's heard about it. And he's headed in that direction some good little while before he makes up his mind to go there. Finally, he gets up his nerve and he goes to his father and he says to his father, "I want what's coming to me." That's the first act of selfishness. All sin is predicated on selfishness. All sin is a selfish choice of one's own person in preference to God. He's about to get involved in a big bucket of it. He's about to go into a real bad case of it. And we're going to watch him as he goes there. We can see him as he goes away. He goes to his father after he gets up enough nerve, and he comes to his father one day when his father working out trying to fix some mules and fix them up for, to get the garden going. And he comes up to his father and he said, "Father, I'm of age. I'm grown. Had you noticed? Could I have what's mine?" And his father, probably after some chiding, said, "You're going to have to be careful and remember who you are. But here's your portion." And he gave it to him. I have a picture of it. I think he took off, and when the first little village that he came to, he stopped and took his money and bought him a long burgundy cape, one with a gold clasp in the middle. And he hooked that on real nice and brushed his hair back, and he went over and bought him a chariot, one that had a leather kind of crossing in the front of it, studded with beautiful silver penetrations. And then he went to the haberdasher and he got him a mule, a horse, a beautiful white horse. And he got all the accoutrements that went for the little apparatus he'd bought. And he bought him a plume and put it on the horse's head. Can't you see him going? I want you to see him. I want you to see where he's going. He's going to the far country. He's proud and haughty. And you can see him as he gets into the far country. He's going to be there, and all of a sudden, I'll tell you what happens. Groupies. Groupies. All of a sudden, everybody in town wants to go out with the mountain boy. All of a sudden, everybody in town saw him come into town. They saw that horse as it went along. They saw the saddlery that he had on that beautiful white horse. They saw the studded, beautiful chariot that had. And he's walking, he's riding into town, and everybody in town almost is following along. All the young men want to say hi. Everybody said, "Where are you from? How you doing?" "Well, he has all these tales he wants to tell. I've been wanting to come to the far country." And they said, "Where do you want to go tonight?" And he said, "I want to go over here." And they said, "Okay, that's just where we wanted to go." And all of a sudden he says, "No, that's not where I wanted to go over." He said, "Well, that's where we wanted to go anyway. Let's go over there." So here they go and they follow him around. That's what sin does, folks. It leads you away from your father. It leads you to the far country. It leads you to where you don't need to be. And he's here enjoying himself, living the high life. All of a sudden there's a drought. All of a sudden, a drought comes, and he loses his golden cape. He has to hock it. And the first thing you know, he has to hock his horse and his chariot. And the first thing you know, that's gone, and over a period of time, he's down to nothing but a loincloth. And he has to get a job. He hasn't been able to find any way to make a living. And finally, he gets a job feeding pigs. Now, maybe I surmise too much, but I suspect this was a little Jewish boy. And if that was the case, do you have any kind of an idea what a repugnancy it was for a young Jewish boy to be feeding swine? He's feeding pigs, folks. Pigs split the hoof but did not chew the cud. That was an unclean animal. Why do you think that Hitler in World War II or before World War II in the late 30s referred to the Jews as pigs? That was an insult to them. He called them swine all the time. This man was in a pig pen. He was feeding swine. I mean, he had gotten down to nothing. And the fact of the matter is, he was ready to start eating the millet that he was feeding the swine. That's how badly he came to be. That's what sin does you. It separates you from your father. It separates you from your father. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. He is down to nothing at all. He is separated from the love of his father. He's separated from his riches. He's separated from his brother. He's separated from anything that has any substance or quality to it. And he has no place to go to do anything about it. He can't find anything to sustain himself. And so all of a sudden, he finds out that he's in a bad place. Sin is separative by its very nature. Sin is separative by its very nature. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. The Son shall not bear the iniquity of the Father, nor the Father the Son. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. It's a very personal thing. It's where you make a choice. You make a choice. God says, don't do that. And you say, I'm going to do that, and you sin. God says, do this, and you say, I don't want to do that, and so you sin. Sin is that selfish choice, and every sin that is committed is predicated on a selfish choice of one's own person in preference to what is right or what is approved by God. And sin is separative by its very nature. It separates you from everything that's any good. It separates you from God. It separates you from the Son. It separates you from the act of resurrection. It separates you from the fellowship of the brethren. It separates you from everything that has any value or any consideration that's worth anything at all. It's a bar to heaven, sin is. It's a distiller of hate. It's a breeder of crime. And please hear me carefully. It's behind every human misery there is. Sin, no matter how you disguise it, is sin. We live in a country where sin's disguised. How long has it been since you picked up the paper and it said Johnny Jones was picked up on 3rd Avenue for sinning? You never read that. And yet sin's going on all the time, more than people that run the red light. Sin is going on all the time. How many times do you see the president mount the podium and here comes the people that look after him, and they're on one side and the other looking after him, and he says, folks, I've decided what's wrong with this country. What's wrong with this country is sin. Nobody's saying that. And yet that's what's wrong with us. It's what's wrong with the home. It's what's wrong with the family. It's what's wrong with our country. It's sin. Sin is a monster. It's behind every human misery that there is. And it separates us from everything that has any value to it. So I want to suggest to you, here is this fella who's been in a sinful state. He's wallowing around in a pit of putridity. He's wallowing around in a maelstrom of ungodly filth. And it's not just the fact that he's there feeding pigs with all of the things that accompany that. It is the fact that he has totally, completely, irrevocably almost separated himself from his God. Don't you see that that's the pitiful part? He separated himself from his Father. And so we see him there, bent in a stupor. Bent in a discouragement. Nothing to do about it. So the scripture says something that's interesting to me. It says he came to himself. And could I ask you a question before he came to that? Where were all the groupies? See, that's what sin does to you. All your friends head the other way. Here he is. He's lost and all the groupies are gone. And the scripture says in the most beautiful way, in the first place it says in the most horrible way, no man gave to him. That's horrible. The groupies are gone. Now it says he came to himself. That's the beautiful part of the passage. A friend of mine named Van Cash, who passed away this year, I called him the Dickens County preacher. He never went anywhere and held a bunch of meetings or edited anybody's paper, never wrote much for anybody's paper. But he was a godly man, and he preached the gospel for 50 years in Dickens County. Kept things on an even keel there. Did a wonderful work. God is pleased with him. I was flattered to death to preach his funeral a while back. He was a great man. This man was in the hospital one time when I was still back in West Texas. And he got sick and had to have his tonsils out. And that doesn't seem like much to the little kids, but to an older person, it's quite a surgery. So I went in there and was trying to visit with him. He was in and out. And the nurse said to me, Mr. Bowman said, do you mind to watch him that he doesn't pull this IV out of his arm? I have to go next door, and I'll be right back. And I said, I'll be glad to do so. So I was watching him there, and he kept faunching around. And I said, now, Van, hold still. You're going to pull that needle out of your arm, and then that nurse is going to come in here and whip me and you both. He raised up on one arm and he said, Bowman, if you don't turn loose of me, I'm going to knock your head off. Well, I didn't get mad at him. You know why? He was not at himself. He was not at himself. And in a little while, he came to, that's where we get that terminology. He came to himself, and all of a sudden he realized where he was, and I told him what he said, and he almost cried. He said, "I didn't mean it." I said, "You did too. I'm going to get you too." But this young fella came to. He was inebriated in sin. He had been blocked off from his father by an ungodly and wretched life. He was wallowing around in this pigsty, and all of a sudden he came to. And he looked around and saw what was really real. He looked around and saw where he was. He looked around and saw how he was. He looked on the inside and saw what he was. And he was not happy with any of it. And so he said, "I'm going home." He said, "I'm going home." I have a picture of his father. I think for a long, long time, he went out, looked down their long, lonesome road toward that far country, and maybe saw the lights that the kid saw. And I think he said over and over, night after night, "God, help my boy. Please, God, help my boy." One day he was going across there with a leather bucket. He was going to pick up the eggs from last night's hatching. And he started toward the creek over there and he saw something coming. And he said to himself, "Could that be my boy?" And he started to go that direction, and suddenly the little fawn stepped off the road and jumped off into the woods. And he went and picked the bucket up again and looked up and said, "God, please help my boy. Please help my boy." One day he was going across and he heard something. And he said, "That's him. That's got to be him." And he looked up and it was the old peddler man. Same words. Same prayer. Day after day after day. "God, help my boy." One day he started back in that direction. He was going over by the creek to take some wood that he had gathered to get ready for the fall season coming up. And he looked down there and he saw something. And he said, "That's probably another mirage of some sort." And he looked again. And his eyes penetrated. And all of a sudden he said to himself, "That's no fawn, and that's not the peddler man, and that's not the caravan. That's my boy coming." And all of a sudden he begins to run toward his boy, and his boy begins to run toward him. And as they fly along toward one another, look at the pictures in the old man's mind. Look at the pictures of the boy when he left, virile and strong and dynamic and powerful. Now look at him. He's emaciated. His hair is disheveled and scattered around with pig dung. He smells strongly of the pigsty. He's in his loincloth. He has no shoes on. He is filthy, dirty, good for nothing. And yet his father is going to bend down and kiss him on the face. He said three things. "I'm going to tell my father. I'm going to tell him I've sinned against God and I've sinned against you. No longer worthy to be called your son. Make me a servant." And he got just one or two out of his mouth. And his father shut up his mouth and started to kiss him. This is the love of God, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to me carefully. The God of the Bible is not some Thor-like character that sits up on a thundercloud and watches as you make your trek along life's pathway. And every time you make a misstep, he looks at you and says, "Aha, you did it again. I'm going to get you, boy." That's the way that's going to happen. He does not do that. He does not throw various and sundry kinds of lightning bolts in your way and then just shudder, make you shudder when you fall and get off the way. No, sir. He's standing there. Just the same way that Jesus was when he looked across the Kedron Brook and saw his beloved Jerusalem and said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered you unto myself as a chick, as a hen doth gather her chicks under her wings, but ye would not." That's his attitude. Come unto me. Come home. That's the answer. That's the answer. How do I get home? I get home by doing what the Father said I must have to come home. Don't you know that the boy had the same restrictions when he got home that he had when he left? And yet he had gone off to the side. He had left it all behind and he had to come back to his father. But thanks be to God, he's coming home again. That old man kind of represents the God of the Lord Jesus Christ. The kind of attitudes that they have toward your lost condition. This is how God is. Don't talk to me about this horrible kind of despicable character who would say to you, "I don't want anything to do with you," because that's not the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible invites you home all the time. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with every temptation find a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. That's the God of the Bible. This young fellow had the opportunity to come home. And he did exactly what he had the opportunity to do. And I'll tell you how you do it. You come to yourself. You come to yourself. You wake up from where you are. You wake up from the sin piled on top of sin that has inhibited your spiritual character. You pick yourself up and you wipe yourself off as best as you can do it. And then you go to him for the final cleansing. That's the way you do it. And it's not going to be done any other way. And so I encourage you tonight. Are you a prodigal? Have you wandered from the pathway of duty? Have you brought reproach upon your father and upon his people? You need to be the prodigal. You need to come back to the Father. Come back home, because that's what you're going to have to do to get remission. He's waiting for you. He waits with outstretched arms. He wants you to come. He doesn't want you to wait any longer. He doesn't want you to put off any longer. He wants you to come home. He's looking down the road, waiting for you to get here. Would you come to him tonight? If you're not his son, first of all, you need to be baptized into Christ. We'll help you with that. But if you've brought reproach on God, on the Father, by an ungodly life, please don't start off this semester with a bad kind of taste in your mouth and with bad sins on your character. And if you're here and there's something in your life that we can help you with in some other way, we want to do that. Would you let us help you? Would you come home to the Father while we stand and sing?